determined in a random drawing on May 14th, 2018. Winner may be notified by telephone after May 21st, 2018. For a copy of official prize drawing rules and restrictions and for the names of the winners, go to kboo.fm/silentdrive2018 and thank you.
This is
good evening, everybody. It is 6 o'clock on a Friday. That means it is time for Bread and Roses. I am Lady Monte. We are also here in the middle of our spring membership drive 2018 at KBOO. So we'll be hearing from Denise and all of our happy volunteers in Studio One, taking your calls, getting those memberships in so we can keep going with this grassroots radio. Bread and Roses has been going for a long, long time. We are the longest running feminist collective in the country on the radio, bringing you news, public affairs, art programs, advocacy-oriented issues that are going to lift up and empower women. So that's what we've been doing. We have a great show planned for you tonight. We're going to open up with an interview from Sheila. They are running for district commissioner in the city of Portland, 2nd District. I've got some details coming up about that. We are also going to be speaking, hopefully, with We'll be waiting for our live interview to come in. We're running a little bit late, but we're also going to have Denise in the air room. And for right now, we're just going to go into that interview with Sheila Jayapal.
We're talking today with Sheila Jayapal, candidate for the Multnomah County Commission to represent North and Northeast Portland. Hi, Sheila.
Hi, Roberta. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm excited to be talking with you today.
Same here.
First of all, could you share a little about your background with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm an immigrant. I was born in India, came to the U.S. when I was 16 to go to college. I've been in Portland for 24 years, all here in District 2 in North and Northeast Portland. I have two kids, both of whom grew up here, graduated from Grant High School. I'm an attorney. I practiced law for about 12 years. My last law job was running the legal department at Adidas America. And I left that job to devote my time to my children and to my community. So I have been working with nonprofit organizations such as Planned Parenthood, All Hands Raised, the Portland Schools Foundation, a number of organizations focusing on education, access to reproductive health services, and services to seniors and people in poverty. I volunteered at Grant High School. I've been a CASA, so lots of work in the community for the last 18 or so years.
Why?
You know, because I care about this community. It's the place I've lived the longest. And what I've seen over the years is that too many folks are struggling. It's Multnomah County, the city of Portland are wonderful places to live. But over time, we have too many folks struggling to find their place and keep their place here. And increasingly, disproportionately, those folks are Black and brown, immigrant and refugee. And I still hold with me the memory of what it was like to come here and feel out of place. And so I want to live in a community where all of us can see themselves, can have everything that we all want, a roof over our heads, education for their children, a family wage job, and a place.
That sounds like a lovely vision. Is that some of what brought you to run? I mean, what's really behind the decision to run for this seat, to represent North and Northeast Portland in the County Commission?
That's exactly what brought me to run. I loved my work with community organizations. I really did. But over the past year or so, I've had an increasing sense of urgency about these trends that we're seeing, and particularly in North and Northeast Portland, in terms of people being pushed out, being displaced because of a history of systemic racism, policies that have really hurt this community in so many ways. I felt a sense of urgency about it and felt that the place to make a difference was in government, and specifically at the county, because the county is the agency that provides the services that have direct impact on the lives of the people I care about. And it's the place that's more tied to my experience working with nonprofit organizations in social service.
Okay. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Sushila Jayapal, candidate for the Multnomah County Commission to represent North and Northeast Portland. So, Sushila, you just shared why you decided to run. Could you tell us, if elected, what are some of your top priorities?
Absolutely. You know, I think the top priority for all of us in this region needs to be housing. I really view housing, its role in displacement and preventing displacement, its role in preventing homelessness, as the most important issue facing our region. And we've got to attack it from a number of different perspectives. We do have to build more affordable housing. We've got to provide shelter and services to those who are already homeless. And I believe we really need to focus on preventing homelessness and preventing displacement. And I think there are a number of ways we can do that, one of which is rent assistance. Another is local housing vouchers, helping seniors who need repairs. There are a number of different tactics, but we have got to slow the flow of people out of housing and into homelessness. And a couple of additional, the county has such a wide reach, but a couple of additional priorities for me are working on connecting people with family wage jobs, because that's the other side of housing affordability, and on reforming our justice system, making sure that we are no longer disproportionately criminalizing poverty, addiction, mental illness, and also disproportionately putting Black and brown folks, immigrant and refugee folks, into our jail system.
Thank you. So there are three other folks in this race. What makes you the most qualified for this position to represent North and Northeast Portland at the Multnomah County Commission?
Mm-hmm. You know, we've got some significant challenges facing us. And in order to address those challenges, we have got to be able to we need leaders who can move change through large systems. I believe I'm the only candidate in the race who's got that experience. I have moved change at Adidas when I implemented a plan and executed a plan to improve conditions in our overseas factories, and at all of the very large nonprofits that I've worked with. And we need leaders who can work across community and across sector. And I have the experience doing that. I've worked with business, I've been in the business sector, I've worked with nonprofits, I've worked with government agencies, and with all of the communities in North and Northeast Portland. And, you know, I'm really honored to say that the support I've received for this campaign since I started running reflects that. I have support from all of the labor unions that have endorsed in this race. I have support from elected officials, including former Governor Barbara Roberts, Representative Earl Blumenauer, Representative Tana Sanchez, Diego Hernandez, and from a wide range of community organizations and folks in community. And so I believe that's what I bring to leadership at the County Commission.
Okay. I noticed as well the county commissioners have endorsed.
They have. All of the Chair Kafouri, as well as all of the commissioners who will be sitting next year, have endorsed me.
Excellent. Okay, so in this climate of resistance, could you tell us, and we'll wrap up with this question, why do local politics matter? How do you fit into this resistance movement?
Local politics are essential. We talk about how we resist the Trump administration. To me, the way we resist is by insisting locally on creating the community that we want to have.
Excellent. We've been talking with Sushila Jayapal, candidate for the Multnomah County Commission to represent North and Northeast Portland. Sushila, thank you so much for sharing some thoughts with us.
Thank you, Roberta.
Hello, Portland, and wherever you are listening on the World Wide Web. My name's Denise, and in a moment, my very dear friend Lady is going to be joining us as well. Here she is, Lady. How's it going?
I'm okay. I'm a little breathless running between the studios, but I'm here.
You know, that's the beauty of community radio.
It's live.
The spontaneous live beauty of making radio happen.
Yeah.
And Lady, you're going to totally pull it off because you're doing Bread and Roses tonight.
Yes. Oh, I joined Bread and Roses Collective. Less than 4 months ago, I think, and just jumped right in. and started hosting programs for this collective once a week, and I'm really enjoying it so far. It's been a challenge, but it's also been hugely inspiring. The people I'm working with and learning from, and empowering women is a huge mission of mine in this world.
And Lady does actually quite a few things, and I'm going to just give a little shout out here. She's also a contributor and producer on a show I host and produce called The Politics of Living. And you do a late night program called
Lighthouse Lessons,
one of the 20,000 things she does here at Cato. And we're so appreciative of people like Lady who come in as a volunteer to make this great programming. And we also are appreciative of you, the listener. We come to you a couple times a year to ask you to become a subscribing member, a part of the KBOO family, to support what we're doing in the world on the radio dial or on the World Wide Web. So give us a call. It's really easy breezy by calling 1-877-500-5266 or visit us online at kboo.fm and just click on that donate button. And you too can join the fun that is all KBOO.
That's right. Yes. Call 877-500-5266. And more than that, you can come into the station and be part of this community. This is just the first step. I've changed so much since I came into KBOO. I was working as a chef and was leaving that career and completely turned my life around when I came into KBOO and started working in production and advocacy and really touching the issues that were important in my life and giving myself a voice. That was a huge step for me.
You know, KBOO does that in so many ways. It does that when someone wants to come in and make radio. It does that to people who are listening, and maybe they're listening to a public affairs program in the morning or sometimes in the evening. They are learning so much about what's happening, not only what's happening in our local community, but also what's happening around the world. So here's an idea. Why not donate $10 a month to KBOO, your favorite community radio station in the whole wide world, by calling 877-500-5266 or visit online at kboo.fm and become a member of KBOO Community Radio.
That's right. About one more time, 877-500-5266. And what we're going to get into just next is an excerpt from radioproject.org. It's a wonderful project, and we're going to listen to Women Rising Radio, Guardians of the Amazon Rainforest. And so that's what we're going to head into next, supporting women, supporting indigenous rights and natural resources that are important to everybody.
This week on Making Contact.
Sobre de mi selva que voy a perder por explotación, a mí me duele mucho.
When I speak of the forest, especially when I speak of the threats and the impacts that could possibly happen to the forest if there's oil drilling, I get really sad. It really hurts me to think of what could happen. But I'm hopeful because I'm determined that we will win. I know that we will win, and we have to, because we have to leave our land for the future generations.
Los indígenas somos quienes cuidamos esas zonas.
As indigenous peoples, we're the ones who take care of natural sites and of sacred sites. Because of the harmony, because of the close relationship that we have with nature and with our territories. We don't want these lands to be profaned. We are the guardians of Mother Earth. And it's extremely important that this be recognized and that these territories be protected.
Indigenous people of the Amazon say that the task of women is to tell the men when to stop hunting. Over the past 500 years, human exploitation of the Amazon rainforest has turned hunting into conquest in a global system that consumes everything, land, resources, labor and products, all for profit. Today, women around the world are challenging this insatiable greed. In the Americas, many indigenous women are stepping up to say no to the massive destruction of their environment. They're in a life and death struggle to save their people, their cultures, their spiritual heritage, their lands, and the earth they revere as their mother.
We're broadcasting live from the final day of the UN Climate Summit here in Bonn, Germany, where all this week activists have been protesting against fossil fuels.
Keep it in the ground. Keep it in the ground.
Women Rising Radio features indigenous leaders of the Amazon. Gloria Hilda Ushigua Santi is president of the Sapara Women's Association in Ecuador. Aura Tegria is legal counsel for the Uwa people of Colombia. They are dedicated guardians of the Amazon rainforest. And the rainforest itself is a guardian against climate chaos for all of us on Earth.
Esa supuesta dirigencia indígena que quiere hacer una república independiente. No importa lo que digan las urnas, no importa lo que diga el pueblo ecuatoriano. Yo soy indígena y voy a mandar sobre el resto. Ya basta.
That was former President of Ecuador, Rafael Correa, lashing out against a massive mobilization for indigenous territorial rights. On nationwide television, Correa singled out Sapara Nation leader Gloria Ushigua, mocking her traditional attire and calling her a clown. His remarks attest to the growing influence of indigenous and environmental movements in Latin America and of their leaders, like Gloria Ushigua.
Cuando yo tenía como más o menos 7 años, entró compañía Vister, nuestro territorio, Sapara.
When I was 7 years old, there was a company that would come into our territory, and they would knock down trees, and we would hear large blasts, and I asked my father, you know, what is this? And we didn't know what it was. They were doing seismic testing for oil exploration. They were deforesting parts of the forest so that they could build platforms out of cement. I didn't know what it was until someone told me, that's an oil well. As soon as they said that, I said, no way. I knew that I would not ever, and we would not ever let the oil companies come into our land.
Después nosotros organizamos y bueno, y ponimos presidente, juez presidente, primer presidente de organización.
We created our organization, the Zapata Nation of Ecuador. We elected our first president, and we actually had to organize to be recognized as a nationality because the government at that time had said that we had become already extinct. And I was kind of embarrassed because I didn't know how to speak Spanish well. None of us did. But, you know, they understood us and the government realized and acknowledged that we existed and that we needed to be recognized as an official nationality and an organization. UNESCO also recognized us and our language. And in May 2001, we had a gathering of different indigenous nations coming together in our territory. And I was delegated to represent our organization at this gathering.
El gobierno respondió muy mal, super mal, contra nosotros, contra mujeres y contra niños también. Eso fue muy, muy violento. El señor Rafael Correa fue muy violento, super mal.
The Ecuadorian government, in particular the Ecuadorian government under the leadership of President Rafael Correa, has not liked our resistance at all. And it has not responded well to the resistance by women. The government has been very violent against us as women and against our children. We organized a national mobilization in 2013 while the government was actually negotiating with oil companies. They were backdoor secret meetings, negotiating our territories to oil companies and other governments. And a representative came out of this closed-door meeting. He was an oil representative from Argentina. And when he came out and he saw all the indigenous people outside protesting, he became really scared. And he actually peed his pants. The police had to take him away in a car, and the government was very upset.
el boleto de captura para nosotros, para 9 personas.
The government sent an order of capture for 9 of us, indigenous people who were at the mobilization and who had signed declarations against oil drilling. And so they had sent basically for us to be put in jail.
Y segunda, el yo vi en Sabatina ya pasó mi foto en televisión con todo mi traje. India payaso vestida. ¿Qué crees así?
Then a few days later, the president gets on national television denouncing us and me personally. They showed images of me with my indigenous dress. And you know, the president of the country gets up there to say, look at this indigenous clown. Look at how she's dressed. And the United Nations got involved and helped to absolve us in the charges.
And we're back.
Oh. Yes, we are back, lady. Indeed, we are. You are listening to KBOO Community Radio. It is Friday evening. We're listening to a special program right here on Bread and Roses, Women Rising Guardians.
Yeah, Guardians of the Amazon Rainforest. And that's Women Rising Radio.
Excellent. And we're streaming that using modern technology.
Uh-huh.
www.kboo.fm might be where you are streaming us right now.
Correct, yeah.
And while you're online, you can also make a donation during our spring membership drive.
That is a good plan.
How about $10 a month comes right out of your checking account or your charge card, and you can become a sustaining member of KBOO.
And that would help us continue this great programming we've been putting out on Bread and Roses for 47 years?
A long time.
A long time. So we've been very women empowered here in KBOO for a long time. We want you to help us continue that tradition. And just a peek at what's going to be happening later on with this program, we are waiting for Oscar Guerrero to come in. They are the new executive director of the Q Center, and they're here to talk about their background from organizing in immigrant communities in Los Angeles and being trans. They have a bachelor's degree in queer ethnic studies and public policy from the University of Oregon. Lots and lots of community organizing, and I believe Q Center is also celebrating an anniversary.
Oh,
another
okay.
community organization so important for empowerment, rights, and getting access to needs. And that's what radio is about for me.
And, you know, our city is so rich with all these different pockets of advocacy, causes, and care. People stepping up for each other to support the rights of different parts of our community.
Right.
And KBOO is one place that those community groups and those individuals can come to talk about those stories. I know I started here at KBOO in umpteen thousand years ago. I'll say it, 1995, came in as a volunteer and had a very similar experience to you. I know everyone is unique, but you come in here and there's all this incredible opportunity to make radio and to share ideas. And it changed me. I was never the same, and I'm still not the same.
How was that for you as a woman, having that experience?
It was so powerful
right.
to be able to use media, in this case radio, to share ideas, to interview someone like Ralph Nader.
Wow.
You know, and to meet all these other key people in the world trying to make change happen.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to be part of that, to share that story, to create my own stories about my experiences, and also to work with other volunteers to figure out how to use this technology.
Well, volunteers like me, you've created so many inroads. Like you said, I'm like mini Denise. Like,
that is the best compliment.
that's the best compliment.
Yeah,
you said, you know,
thank you.
You've made so many inroads for people like me to come along and take advantage of those tracks and, you know, that access that's been created. And we want to keep that access going. So call 877-500-5266 right now. Become a member. Make your contribution. All the little ladies and Denises and women in your life can have access to this radio and this technology to amplify their voices.
Because KBOO's been here for 50 years. This is our 50th anniversary. And we're going to go back to our programming in just a moment after a short music break.
Yes.
But we want to just share with you those numbers again, 877-500-5266. Become a sustaining member today. $10 a month makes a huge difference. And as a matter of fact, at that gift, you can get a special KBOO 50th anniversary special package, which has a CD, a booklet, as well as a really fun looking enamel pin. I think I'm going to have to Instagram that. So that now we're going to throw it back to Liam.
Gave me tools to defend my people. It's given me tools, legal tools, to say we as a people have rights, and we have rights that have to be respected.
A través de movilizaciones, campañas de visibilización, denuncias, pero también de acciones legales para poder acudir al sistema
interamericano. Carried out mobilizations and protests and marches, different kinds of campaigns, and also legal action, engaging both the Inter-American system of human rights but also the Colombian legal system. And we were victorious. We were able to kick Occidental Petroleum out of our territory, a company so rich and so powerful, but we were able to take them out of our territory. So in 2014 and continuing through 2015, we carried out a campaign. We mobilized, we marched, we elicited international solidarity, we started legal actions, and of course the most important being the cultural and spiritual component, using our rituals and our songs and our prayers. And with that, we had a second victory. We got the Colombian government to agree to deactivate and dismantle the Magallanes gas well. This was a huge victory for us because this is a well that had already been dug more than 2,000 feet underground, but the Colombian government agreed to dismantle it and totally remove it.
Both Aura Tegria and Gloria Ushigua have faced contempt and cultural attacks from their own governments, from multinational corporations, from the Catholic Church, and the global evangelical movement. The government sided with the church when it targeted the Confederation of Indigenous Activists of Ecuador, also known as CONAI, specifically going after leaders like Gloria Ushigua.
1992, yo tuve dos hijos.
In 1992, at this time, I had two children. I had a boy of 8 years old and a baby that was 1 year and 1 month old. It was when CONAI had mobilized indigenous people in Ecuador, and I went to the mobilization. And I came back to the territory, and I was fine. But then I found out that my child had disappeared, my eight-year-old child. No one knew what had happened to my son. And this really, really, really hurt me. I asked my father to give me some plant medicine to help me die, as I didn't know what to do. So he gave me this very strong medicine. And a lot of people don't ever wake up after having this medicine. And I saw lots of things, but I didn't die.
Eso no sabía nada qué pasó con mi hijo. Nadie tenía comunicación. ¿Qué pasó? Nunca encontré ni hueso.
As we gained our territory and our rights to our territory, other indigenous peoples, some of our neighbors, were not happy with this. But this was also instilled by fear from the missionaries. So I went to speak to the missionary who was in the communities, and I went to tell him directly, why are you saying this to people? We're not hurting anyone, so why are people coming to hurt me? Texaco, they had the blessing of the Catholic Church. There's video footage of the Cardinal of Ecuador going to the very first oil drill. He was there to bless it. You know, I have a lot of anger towards what they have done.
Gloria Oshigua went to the Ecuadorian government and demanded that the missionaries be removed from Sapara territory. Throughout the Amazon, indigenous people have risen up against the expansion of Christianity that has routinely accompanied economic exploitation of natural resources. In Colombia, the Uwa Nation has also endured cultural onslaught from the Catholic Church and the evangelical movement. Aura Tigría and her family lived through that struggle.
El pueblo de la nación Uwa, a nuestro territorio llegó la Iglesia Católica.
For the Uwa people, the Catholic Church arrived in about the 60s and 70s during a big wave of proselytization, and it caused a lot of harm for our people. The church established itself in strategic points in our territory, and they took children and they interned them in educational centers. They made them learn Spanish, and they wouldn't let them speak Uwa. They wouldn't let them chew coca. They wouldn't let them dance. They wouldn't let them perform our rituals. It was really a cultural death for the Uwa. It was extremely sad. A lot of children became orphaned. A lot of parents lost their children. In fact, if parents tried to refuse to hand their children over to the church, they were tortured. Some of them were tied up to trees and beaten. Essentially, they tried to kill off our culture. And many Uwa people experienced this. My grandparents, my parents lived through this. In the year 2000, we, the Uwa, made the decision to ask them to leave our territory. We realized that we had rights both on the national level and the international level, that we too were Colombian citizens and we had the right to our land and the right to our culture. It was a big fight with them. They said, no, we're here to help you. We're here to convert you to Catholicism. We're here to make you people, they said. And we said, no, we love our culture. We love our rituals. We love our language. We have so much cultural richness, and we don't want to give that up. Finally, they left.
Many Catholics and other Christians have defended the rights of indigenous people in the Americas. Some have also faced violence and death for their activism. In 2005, a wealthy Brazilian rancher paid assassins to kill Sister Dorothy Stang, a 73-year-old nun from the United States. Stang was known in the region for wearing a T-shirt that said, "The death of the forest is the end of our lives." You're listening to Making Contact. This week's program was produced by Women Rising Radio. Visit us on the web at womenrisingradio.com and at radioproject.org. The Uwa of Colombia and the Sapara people of Ecuador have also used global media coverage to raise awareness of their struggle for survival. They join forces with international organizations like Amazon Watch. For decades, Amazon Watch has brought the fight for the Amazon rainforest to public attention. Amazon Watch's executive director, Leila Salazar López, works with Gloria Oshigua and Aura Tegría to rally global support for the protection of the Amazon rainforest and for indigenous communities living there. Leila became aware of the Amazon and its vulnerability to destruction as a student.
I basically was going down there. I was like, I want to learn about the tropical ecology. I want to plant trees. I want to learn about the plants. Well, little did I know that there was oil development in the Amazon. I had no idea. And I found out that Texaco had caused massive destruction of the northern Ecuadorian Amazon, literally on my bus ride to the rainforest, our bus stop, because there was a break in the oil pipeline. And the oil from the Trans-Ecuadorian pipeline was gushing into the river. Thousands of gallons were just spilling into the Papayacta River, which is the main water source for the city of Quito. And I came back and said, I want to find people who are working to protect rainforest. You know, I started working at Amazon Watch in 2002 as an organizer around on the Chevron campaign. And Chevron had taken over Texaco, and I basically dedicated my life to holding Chevron accountable. So on various occasions, they would be organized mobilizations, and I would see photos of these emblematic leaders, you know, one of them being Gloria Ushigua. You started hearing about these women who were always kind of front and center organizing the women's mobilization or a women's march or a women's gathering. And Gloria and the other women and allies asked for support, and we organized a delegation to New York to go and speak to the UN and different UN offices and permanent forum of indigenous peoples, organizations like Human Rights Watch. And our indigenous sisters, they had really been wanting to organize a gathering, a coming together of indigenous women defending Mother Earth in a treaty, because never before had there ever been a treaty signed by indigenous women. So they decided to call the first treaty signing in New York, in Central Park.
The Indigenous Women's Treaty, signed in 2015, calls global attention to the reality that estamos todos juntos, we're all in this together. Their message is simple. Everyone's health and safety is tied to the health and safety of the environment, including the Amazon and other rainforests worldwide. These forests are the lungs of the planet and provide protection from climate chaos. One of the signers of this historic treaty is Candy Mossett, an indigenous Mandan Hidatsa Arikara activist from North Dakota. Candy is a leader in the struggle at Standing Rock against big oil.
We have an earth right now that is literally screaming at us and warning us. Look at Houston and Hurricane Harvey and Puerto Rico. It's only going to get worse. And we have to be able to collectively fight back against this broken system, or else we're all going to die in this broken system. Because it was recognized in 1992, climate change is real. And so ever since then, we've been coming together and saying that we're going to do something about climate change. And Gloria is one of the original signers of that treaty to say that we're in solidarity together as women. We're strong, and we are going to create change, and we are going to change the violence that exists in this world. And we're going to do it together. I know Gloria, and I admire her deeply for her courage and for everything that she's been going through, because of what's happened to her and her family as a result of her fighting back. She's gone through a lot and still continues to fight. You know, people are being killed. People are disappearing in the jungles because they're fighting back against this industry. When we say we're on the front lines and that it's war, it really is. People are fighting and people are dying. And they're doing it to save humanity.
The indigenous environmental movement is based on the principles of nonviolent resistance, yet activists and allies have faced brutal violence from their adversaries. In 2018, Patricia Gualinga, director of international relations for the Sarayaku people of Ecuador, was threatened and her home attacked in an open challenge to her activism. In 2017, Rosa Moreno, a legendary nurse serving Ecuadorians poisoned by Chevron's pollution of the Amazon, died in the jungle clinic she built, killed by the toxins left behind in Chevron's open waste pits. And in 2016, indigenous Lenca activist and Goldman Prize winner Berta Cáceres was murdered in her home in Honduras. In In Colombia, most Uwa children, elders, and medicine people still have very little contact with the outside world. Aura Tegria had to learn Spanish, study Colombian and international law, and become a bridge between the Uwa and the rest of the world. But Aura maintains a deep connection to her indigenous roots.
Hay un lugar muy hermoso dentro de nuestro resguardo, dentro de nuestro territorio, que se llama Banarugua.
There's a place that's really beautiful in our territory called Banarugua, where there's a really beautiful waterfall that becomes later a river that runs through our territory. We believe that this place is the doorway to other worlds. And it's a very sacred place for us. It's where we go to meditate, to pray, and to ask help from our ancestors. And this place is extremely special to me. I hold it in my heart and in my mind, even when I'm very far away from it.
Like Aura Tegria, Gloria Ushigua is deeply motivated by her love of the Amazon rainforest and by her determination to be its guardian.
Cuando estoy hablando sobre de mi selva que voy a perder por explotación, a mí me duele mucho.
When I speak of the forest, especially when I speak of the threats and the impacts that could possibly happen to the forest if there's oil drilling, I get really sad. It really hurts me to think of what could happen. But I'm hopeful because I'm determined that we will win. I know that we will win, and we have to, because we have to leave our land for the future generations.
Machi canta me una nana, fuego cura agua sana. Machi canta me una nana.
And that's it for this Women's Desk edition of Making Contact. This program was produced by Women Rising Radio. Check out our video about the Indigenous Women Guardians of the Amazon at womenrisingradio.com. Thanks to Democracy Now! And Andy's News. Special thanks to Amazon Watch and Paul Paz y Miño. Leila Salazar Lopez and Moira Bierce of Amazon Watch served as our translators for this program. All music by Maria de Lime Dorsey. Women Rising Radio's producer is Lynn Feinerman. Our audio engineer is Stephanie Welch, and I'm your host, Sandina Robbins.
And that was a great segment from Women Rising Radio, Guardians of the Amazon. And this is just another example of how using technology, broadcast technology, and all different types of channels from online, where you can find that program. It's a SoundCloud station. It's a podcast online, Women Rising Radio. And then we can broadcast that to you, and you can get in touch with issues that are far-reaching and, you know, specifically buried as well. I guess they're obscure because it's happening in a very far-off land to people whom you don't know. But there's also direct intentions behind corporate powers that are exploiting natural resources and exploiting indigenous populations outside of our eyesight. And so being connected like this through a community of radio is so important. And that's why we need you to call in 877-500-5266 so we can continue spreading that awareness of what's happening with our world.
You make some fabulous points there, Lady. My name's Denise. I'm joining Lady and Liam in the air room right
thank
now.
Thank you, Liam.
Behind the scenes, Liam. So, and thank you, listener, for tuning in to KBOO right now. Mm-hmm. I also want to say a shout out of thanks to Helga out in Newburgh and Valerie in McMinnville. They visited KBOO.fm and they clicked right on that Donate Now button and made a donation to KBOO Community
awesome.
Radio. That's how easy it is. And if you're so inclined, we'd love for you to do what Helga and Valerie did. Become a member of KBOO, and for a $10 a month donation, you can get the KBOO 50th Anniversary Special Package. It's got a special CD, it's got this booklet with all this great stuff in it, and it's got a really cool enamel pin, and you can get that for an annual gift of $120, which can be $10 a month. Easy breezy way to do that, call 877-500-5266 or visit online kboo.fm.
I also just want to shout out that if you become a member now, you'll be entered to win a prize. Today's drawing is for $300 gift certificate from Brothers, a medical and recreational dispensary. So call 877-500-5266 right now to be entered for a chance to win. You can go to kboo.fm for rules and details on all the prizes. And so our live guest will not be coming into the studio tonight, and that's cool because we got two live people right here.
That's right.
And we're also playing excellent programming. Mm-hmm. And so we were just listening to some really great stuff off of radioproject.org, and we're going to do that again. This project coming up next is called Making Contact, and that's another station. And this program that you'll be listening to is called We Got Next, Youth Poets Changing the World.
Exactly. And we can do that kind of stuff on community radio. Yes. We can respond to
life
and technology and come up with creative ways to provide this programming that is so fabulous to learn about world affairs. So we're going to go now to that program right here on KBOO.
Hi, I'm Anita Johnson, and this week on Making Contact, we explore how youth poets are using spoken word to change lives and transform the world, a new narrative via the hands of the next generation. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the 20th annual Brave New Voices. We are very excited to have you here. I'm just going to say what's up for a couple minutes and then get off the stage. But first of all, I want to thank you, and I want to acknowledge all the hard work that everybody has done to be here tonight. And not just the incredible You Speak staff and all the different people who have helped produce this festival and put it on, but I know how hard all the adults in the room, you've been working with the young poets. I know how hard all you poets have been working on the work that you've been working at home to get here. I know how hard you all been fundraising to get here. I know how the travel, everything. So thank you, because an idea doesn't mean that people don't participate, so thank you all for participating.
Over 600 youth poets from around the globe were in attendance for the Brave New Voices International Youth Poetry Slam Festival. The four-day event, hosted by Youth Speaks, has become one of the world's largest youth-centered spoken word festivals. For the past 20 years, BNV has offered young poets the opportunity to share their views on topics such as police brutality, racism, immigration, identity, and mental illness.
I struggle with mental illness, and I've struggled with mental illness for 5 years, ever since I was 11.
That 16-year-old poet, Kayla Kitchen, from San Francisco.
My best friend killed herself over the phone with me when I was 13, and that definitely fuels my writing. And going from someone who has tried multiple times, more than 10, someone who has been dying one night only to wake the next and forget about it like it never happened. I write because I am queer. I write because I am mentally ill, and people don't see that as a real problem.
Kayla's struggle with mental illness highlights her resiliency, and now she's inspired to reach her peers through spoken word.
As an adolescent, I was told I have borderline, and I'm 16, and it can't be diagnosed. But to live the way I have lived for 5 years and not know what my diagnosis was because people didn't really believe that adolescents could have it, that has killed me. But I am proud to be here and to keep writing, because I want to be a voice for the voiceless, because not everybody can get on this stage. Not everybody can get on this stage and do what I do, and I am just so thankful to be here now. Because I tried to commit suicide. I ended up in Malibu in rehab somewhere. I voluntarily went because I knew there was a sliver that wanted to live. And I've been out of rehab for a month, and I am here on this stage, and I can spill my story. And as long as I'm reaching some girl, some guy, anybody in the crowd that felt the same way I do and feels the same way I do, if I could reach them and tell them that it's okay to be this way, that's why I write.
There are six colors in the rainbow. Red, resentment, rage, counting the drops of blood shed from the actions we never took, from the words never said, the love never shared because our love was never good enough. Regret. Roses of recovery bloom but still prick when taken in hand, lodged between skin and muscle. Growing aside, crimson curtains close to the outside world. You cannot see what I feel, but when you start to feel it for yourself, the thorns will come. Orange. Outside. Outcast. Outbursts of sun turn sunlight, water turns gold, earth turns home, yet we do not live in harmony. We fear what we don't know. But what if I told you I could see sunlight from closet door, gold woven in the hands of a woman, home in what people could never understand because they never had the courage to come out? Yellow. You. Yearning. Waiting for hope to knock at our front door. Assure us that we can come outside, that with hope comes change, comes courage, comes love. Despite the red flags, red hearts beat louder than sirens, speak more truth than our words. Your heart will guide the way to your love, only if you let it grow green. Guidance, going, moving towards green grass, clearing picket signs and white fences so we can walk the street hand in hand and not feel guarded. So I can kiss you in public and not notice the staring, the judgment, the glaring. If fire becomes fear, I want to turn to water to put the fire out. Blue, black, and blue. Bruises in places I never thought they'd bloom. I did not know a heart could be broken when loving behind bars of binding Bibles, labeling our love as a sin when I attend church every Sunday. How can God hate me when he is supposed to love all of his children regardless of who I lay with in bed? Purple. Persistence, perseverance, peeling petals from protester pigment, taking the hate as a compliment. When told that gay, I say, thank you. I say, I try to pour queerness into every black hole that may be your heart. All six colors of the rainbow. A flag that stands for more than just an ununited nation, but a person, a feeling, an outcast named unaccepted, named curious, named confused. Outcast sits in the back of the class, wears nothing but black to disguise their color palette. Outcast is left to melt into the white tile, weave within the pencil shavings scattered across the floor. The truth is, we cannot erase what has been done to us, but we can continue writing our story. Give Outcast a voice, because we are not outcasts. We are not your discomfort, nor are we here to please you. I might feel bad about it on my own, but I wouldn't want to be any other way. Simply water turned watercolor turned gay.
For many of the young poets, the Brave New Voices Festival is liberating and transformative because it allows for expression without judgment. 17-year-old Victor Massoni from Chicago.
It's taught me to allow myself to be vulnerable, you know, and also just be expressive in whatever I do. And it's giving me a platform to speak a story that's not only mine, you know, but a story that someone else has, or a story that someone else can't tell because they feel like they're not able to, or they're just incapable of doing so. You know, so this work has given me the ability to put words together in a way that, you know, tells a story that, you know, not many people know how to tell, especially when it's personal or when it's very relatable to my personal life or someone that I know.
Another youth poet, 17-year-old Quentin Campbell Rodd from New York, acknowledges that sharing your most personal stories on stage can make you extremely vulnerable, but that's not stopping him.
You leave it all out on the stage. Like, people say that you leave your heart on the stage, and that's a quite literal term when you're talking about slam poetry. You put your entire truth out there, no matter how harsh, no matter how funny, no matter how sad it is. being willing to share that's always a great form of liberation right there.
And according to Arielle Marie from Atlanta, the Brave New Voices International Spoken Word Festival not only brings young people together, but it also highlights perspectives from a generation that is often stereotyped and pigeonholed.
I think our young people are categorized as lazy or apathetic or out of touch or prioritizing the wrong things. And I think that what is easy is to look at a generation that is completely transforming communication, completely transforming identity. And like, because those things are new, otherwise then, what is more difficult and more rewarding is to take what is being transformed, what is being rebirthed, and learn it and adopt it and accept it.
Tish Jones is a Brave New Voices Leadership Fellow and the director of last year's festival. She says that Brave New Voices is not just about expression, it's about creating a much needed counterculture.
Part of what this is doing is pushing back against the dominant narrative, right? So you see certain people, because of the history of this country and anti-blackness, anti-queerness, anti-brown folks, et cetera, et cetera. You see people and you immediately write them off, and you may not even know it. You're indoctrinated into sort of this dominant culture thing, right? So what this space does is it flips that, right? It's like, I'm going to put before you someone brilliant that you may not have ever considered. They are going to blow you away. You should be listening to these folks. Brave new voices.
Tish's declaration of these young people's brilliance is displayed throughout the four-day festival, a festival that welcomes young people from all walks of life and is big on inclusion. One of the performance spaces called Queeriosity, a safe space for queer youth poets and allies to explore topics like perceptions of sexuality and gender. And on the second day of the festival, I met up with 17-year-old Aisha June, a youth poet from Chicago, whose poem titled Honey and Oats is about heartbreak and her own liberation.
The first time I saw you and him kiss, it felt like hot stones pressing into my chest. Dark skin, fine. 6'2 with the six pack, he stole your love again from me. All I could do was watch it happen. Called what pain I couldn't describe an allergy attack. Y'all lips mix like peanut butter to jelly. Can't wait to escape this moment, keep head up, eyes burn. I banish them pupils to the back of my head. Roll them back so far you don't see me cry. Flashing back to when my world, our world, was two brown-bodied girls rolling around on fresh green grass prodding at our skin. The smell of dirt in the air, our imagination so big we went past every picket fence and front lawn. We'd roam through woods on Saturday afternoons, backpacks filled with cheese sticks and fun dips for thought. You were my best friend, and I was in love with you. Not that way. Cute and coincidental, light and airy, but this way, the kind of way that I'd do anything for you. Way back out in those woods before city lights became a thing, you'd run to me. Only promise to keeping you mine was adding Nature Valley bars to the menu and forever. You must have grew out of tasting honey and oats. I feel a sting as I snap back to reality. You move away from his kiss, taking leaps closer to see my burnt-out eyes. I reek of honey and oats, more familiarly known to you as past empathetic. Your lips pop open, you say, "Did you see it? He finally kissed me." My throat too sore to say it hurt. Crackled vibrations bubble up from my larynx. I must have missed it. I must have missed it. I remember the first time you kissed me. Only for fun. Only when you needed your practice for him. Wow. Only when you were bored enough to try my lips out like a new flavor of gum. Only when we would sit in back corner of room away from window while your mom was asleep, I held you. We were locked into each other. You said you'd never let me go, but you did. Maybe if I were big enough, man enough, straight enough to convince you that I could be more than a secret you were too afraid to admit, maybe you would be proud to say that the first time you kissed someone, it wasn't him. It was me.
Wow. Tell our listeners a little bit about the poem that you...
So thanks to our local community partners who have donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Daily Cafe, located at 902 Northwest 13th Avenue. Daily Cafe serves breakfast, lunch, wine, and spirits daily. Lunch was provided by Boke Bowl, with two locations, 1028 Southeast Water Avenue and 1200 Northwest 18th at Northrop. Boke Bowl serves ramen with homemade noodles and more. Dinner was provided by Canaan's Barbecue Rib Express, located at 5410 Northeast 33rd Avenue, an award-winning genuine hickory smoked barbecue with their own special sauce. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
Come on, play some blues now. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Inner City Blues Festival on Saturday, April 21st from 5:30 to midnight at the North Portland Eagles Lodge in Portland. For the past 7 years, the Inner City Blues Festival has focused on healing the healthcare blues, supporting Oregon's universal healthcare movement. Performers this year include the Norman Sylvester Review with Sarah Billings and Leanne Miller, the King Louis Payne Quartet and LaRonda Steele, and many, many more. Again, that's the Inner City Blues Festival on Saturday, April 21st from 5:30 to midnight at the North Portland Eagles Lodge, 7611 North Exeter Avenue at Lombard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
All right, everybody. That was a great episode of Bread and Roses. We listened to an interview from Shashila Jayapal, one of the